So hi and welcome to the Movies You Love podcast. It's the podcast where I generally every couple of weeks get to sit down with a film lover and discuss the movie that helped them fall in love with film. This week on the show I have Ingu Khan, the writer for the LA Times, The Village Voice, as well as IndieWire. And I guess I need to start off this show with an apology, because I've been holding on to this episode for over 2 weeks in excess of when I was supposed to be posting it, but I've had so many recording issues. I've had the podcast be broken on me about 3 times. I've had my file being corrupted 4 more times during edits. And like, seriously guys, I feel like while I am a hardened Linux fanboy, you will hear me curse out a lot of Apple fanboys and Windows people, telling them, no, they did it right. Guys, how can't we do Audacity any better? What do I need to do to get a better editing tool? I need to do more research into this. But anyways, I shouldn't be jabbering about this. First of all, once again, apologies to my guest. I don't know how it took me this long to do this, but this show is great. And thank you so much for coming on, Ingu. And the film she decided to talk about was a 1999 film by Pedro Almodovar, All About My Mother. And the conversation is fantastic. We get into so many things that I couldn't even have assumed or guessed we would have talked about, but amazingly, I love it. Anyways, I'm gonna stop talking at this point. Before I go, I should put this at the top. I think I need to start putting this at the top more, which is to tell people you should go and if you're not already, you should go and you should subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. You can also do the same, I believe, through Stitcher, and you can get the podcast over at my site on gmarrowkeys.com. Might cut that last bit up, but anyways, here's the show. Thanks so much for listening. Why am I saying thank you? You haven't listened yet. But here's the show. Go.
Eva al desnudo.
¿Cómo venía a cambiar el título? All About Eve significa todo sobre Eva.
Todo sobre Eva suena raro.
Léeme algo, como cuando era pequeño.
Prefacio. Empecé a escribir cuando tenía 8 años.
¿Lo ves? No soy el único.
So, we're just gonna start right here, Ingu, and I want to say hi and thanks so much for coming and talking with me.
Thanks for inviting me.
You have asked, I think you're going to be the first to go to Spain. You're the first to ask for us to go to the world of Pedro Almodovar and talk about his 1999 film, All About My Mother. I generally try and start with a simple question because I think it's just the perfect starting point for all of these conversations. To talk about the first time you actually saw this film, what was it like for you at that time? How did you see it?
Well, I would love to talk about that, actually. So you mentioned that the movie came out in 1999. So we probably got it here around 99 or 2000, which means that I was probably 15 or 16 years old. So it was sort of like that very formative age. And I guess something that I find really interesting about myself, although maybe like nobody else will, is that I never really watched a lot of movies growing up. Because, I mean, I watched like Disney movies or whatever, but my parents' English isn't very good, and so we never went to the movie theater. And so this was a really formative film for me, not just because it was sort of like one of the first times where I read a review and I decided to check out the movie, and then that sort of like spiraled into full-fledged cinephilia, but like I think like maybe a year or after I saw this movie, my mom actually ended up buying a video store, and so it just like happened at this like weird moment. And I'm sure that even without this movie, I would have become a full-fledged cinephile anyway. But it really is just like one of those movies where everything comes together. So anyway, Yeah, I don't really. Did that answer your question? No.
It's brought up a lot of things, but I'm curious because you didn't quite say, as you say, you didn't write answer the question. Did you see this movie in the theaters?
I did not see it in the theater. I think I saw it on like a top 10 yearly best list. And that's why I decided to pursue it. And I saw it on like a big television at my best friend's house.
I find it very interesting that I'm going to say you might be the first person to fall into this category to be someone who was brought to a movie through someone's writing about the film, saying that you read a review about it and then that kind of pushed you to watch it. As someone who ended up in the world of writing about movies, like, did that actual connection have anything to do with just how you write about movies today?
Maybe like in a very general sense of, if I really love a movie, I really want to help push the movie, like, and I want more people to see it, I guess. Maybe in a very general sense, but I guess there is kind of this implicit love of, or at least an appreciation of criticism you have to have, I think, when you discover a movie, like an amazing movie, through a piece of criticism. I mean, like, when that happens, how could you not thank the critic in some way? Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And out of curiosity, can you remember who it was that wrote that piece, or is that completely away? You don't even recall their name, reading the name at this point.
I remember it was on Time magazine, so it was probably Richard Corliss. I'm not really sure.
Okay. So
I think
you were
Richard Corliss, and I remember really liking him, and that was sort of like one of the first film critics that I decided, like, I'm going to read this person's column every time that I see his byline, just because, you know, like, I really liked what he had to say about film.
So were you and your family like a Time magazine subscriber who was consistently going into that catalog?
Yeah.
You mentioned your family owned a video store. And I don't really... No, I don't think you quite said how close a connection at time-wise you had between seeing this film in the video store happening in your family. What kind of a thing did that do for you as a lover of film at that point in time to have that access next door to you, or however close it was?
It was obviously like an ideal situation. It was like a very generic video store. I mean, it had like a super generic name of Video Max. I doubt it's there anymore, sadly, because this was like right before Netflix became big and then killed all of the video stores. But it was just like your neighborhood, you know, $2.50 movie that people went to because it cost too much to go to the Blockbuster, because the Blockbuster cost like $4.50 a movie. So we just got like really popular stuff with like a smattering of foreign movies. And because I was like a snotty kid, I watched as many foreign movies as possible. And certainly watching this movie made me think that instead of checking out, I don't know, I guess this is like when John Travolta was big. So like, instead of checking out like a John Travolta movie, I should really like do my homework and try to watch as many foreign movies as possible. And I think, I think like if that's the direction that you go in, like how can you not fall in love with movies? I think some of the things that really annoys me is when people say, oh, foreign movies are, like, better than American movies. I don't really know if people still say this, but it's something that I used to hear a lot when I was in high school and college. And it's just the case that, like, basically the best of what other countries have to offer tend to come over here. So if you're only experiencing the creme de la creme of cinema, how can you not fall in love with cinema?
No, yeah, that's definitely true. And I feel like that kind of mentality, that idea of, oh, all foreign films are better than what we have on the West, or we could do it in the opposite side, which I know a lot of people are in somewhat, who are saying they hate foreign films because one reason or another, just kind of blanketing thing. Those are kind of mentalities that you kind of even if you have it at some point in your own movie love realization, they're just stages of your love. Like, you just haven't found out that this is what you're being exposed to, and you need to kind of temper all of your reactions and take everything piece by piece. But I'm kind of curious still to do with the video store, being that snobby child who, as you put it, who was into all of these foreign films. Did you eventually have any sort of input as to what films ended up on the shelf in your store? Like, you need to have this available to people.
No, it was my mom's store, and someone told her, like, what to buy. I'm sure that if I had my way, there would have been a lot less porn at the store, for instance. So it's probably a good thing that I didn't get my say, because, you know, the video store made money.
Oh, all that porn brought in all the money. Oh, wow.
I'll cry for the porn. The porn that's all lost now, because the video store died.
Do you still have any keepsakes from the store, like, video-wise, that you're like, yes, I still have that?
You know, my mom has a bunch of VHS tapes, like, all around her house from when she sold the video store. She picked out, like, the VHS copies of, like, certain duplicate movies, and I have no idea if she's even ever watched them. I guess that's, like, our memorabilia from the store.
I'm gonna go ahead and hope there's no porn in there, but who knows?
I think about it.
Coming back to this movie and when you actually saw it and how it worked out for you, I'm very curious, because Pedro Almodovar is a special kind of filmmaker who, it seems to me, is one of the few male filmmakers out there who finds it utterly important to write great female roles. And yep. I'm curious for you how much of an impression he had on you, because he always seemed to focus on women and making women into something more grand than movies generally made them, at least in the West.
No, that was one of the major, major reasons, I think, why I love this film as much as I did. And, I mean, it's really interesting, because I have just finished watching the movie about half an hour ago, and it's really interesting to me, because this movie, I think, is sort of a turning point for him, where after this movie, he started writing a lot more about women and sort of heterosexual relationships, and I've seen a lot of his movies. I've seen probably, like, all of them except for maybe one or two. And before, his movies were so, like, essentially, like, they were really gay movies. And this one sort of has this, like, very interesting combination of camp, which we think of as sort of, like, a gay genre, and melodrama, which we usually think of as, like, a quote-unquote, like, woman's genre. And so I think something that really appealed to me is this combination of, like, this very dramatic sensibility along with the camp, so that you have this, like, perfect amalgamation, at least for me, of something very, very serious and tragic, and then at the same time just being, like, really fucking irreverent about it. Like, I was writing down some of, like, the dialogue that I was listening to, and there's, like, this part where one of the characters is talking about how, like, Prada is really great for nuns, which, like, maybe as a normal heterosexual guy, like, that's, like, a joke that you might not really get. But that was, like, hilarious to me. Or there's, like, a part where, like, the mother and son ask each other if they would, like, prostitute themselves for, like, the other. It, like, I don't know. Like, it's just, like, it's so heartfelt, like, almost, like 200%, like, emotions on your sleeve, heartfelt. And that combination, I am sure it doesn't work for everyone, but for me, like, you don't see that in most movies. And so it was really revelatory for me. And then, of course, like, we can go into all of the other, like, signature stuff that he has about, like, visuals and stuff.
You mentioned the film having all of these attributes just out there for everyone, on its sleeve, as it were. And it's one thing that this movie, I find, like, there a lot of what you mentioned are things that I saw and I noted, but it didn't quite hit me the way I think it hit you. You know, you talk about the Prada and the nuns, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of cute. But I'm sure I didn't get it on the level that I'm sure others do. But one thing that this movie definitely keeps on its sleeve is its own little connections with cinema when it comes to women in films. It'd be one thing if it just left it there, but when it leaves it, when it tells it all out to you in the end credit, just before the credits, talking about, why is her name escaping me? The woman from all of the Cassavetes films.
Betty Davis.
No, but yes, she's one name that was in there. I'm thinking of, why am I so bad at this game? My names always escape me. I'm so bad at this. I'm thinking of Gina Rowlands, who was in Opening Night. I'm thinking of Betty Davis, who was in All About Eve. I'm talking about the roles of A Streetcar Named Desire and all of these things, where Almodovar is trying to show us that there are films out there where women were allowed. I say allowed, that's a bad way for me to put it, but it almost seems right, to be the powerful and the important role in movies.
Well, I think I totally agree with you, and it's something that I think, you know, when I was watching this movie when I was like 15 or 16, like, I had maybe read A Streetcar Named Desire, and all of the references completely flew by me. Now I am slightly more educated than I was like a bajillion years ago. I think that something that really struck me is that it's very specific, because it's not just about men who write for women. It's all gay men who write for women. Like, you have, like, scenes from A Streetcar Named Desire written by Tennessee Williams. And then at the end, when Uma is done with her play and then she moves on to the next play, it's a tribute to Lorca, who was a Spanish poet and playwright who was also gay, who was probably killed because he was gay during the Spanish Civil War. And then you have All About Eve. And so you have this, like, running theme of gay men who write about these, like, very dramatic women situations. And the thing that I like about the movie is that it doesn't just very forcefully put himself, like, Almodovar doesn't just put himself into this canon of, gay writers who write about women. And I'm sure that, like, oh my God, I'm blanking on the main character's name.
Manuela?
Yeah, I'm sure that if Manuela's son Esteban had grown up to be the writer that he was going to be, I think there's sort of this, like, implication that he would have been one of these, gay writers too, who are writing about women. He even says, like, at the beginning of the movie, I'm going to write a story about you. So there's that running theme, and then there's sort of, like, what the movie does, which is to create this community between women on one hand, and then gay people or queer people on the other. And then they have this, like, discussion about how, like, women are more tolerant, or, like, women put up with more shit, or women just don't want to be lonely, or whatever. I mean, like, there's a little small scene that does that. But the point is that there's this real community building, or this alliance building, or whatever, of women on the one hand and queer people on the other. And it's really interesting to see how that really comes together, both in the plot of the film and then also as part of that canon.
I like that when you're talking about the queer side of this film, that for something so simple as being the father of the two main children in this movie, one being Esteban, who we see early on, and the second Esteban towards the end, where you have that moment where where Lola, that's his name, right? What they refer to him as, Lola.
To call her Lola, we should use like a female pronoun.
Yeah. Right. When he finally gets to meet his two sons, basically, and there's this moment towards the end of the movie where the paranoid mother of the, I guess grandmother, paranoid grandmother of the son goes, "Why did you let that transvestite," or whatever word she used, I can't even remember exact word she uses, "touch the child? Like, he's going to get diseases and all sorts of things." And you're like, no, you're fine. She's going to get it just as much as you are. Just breathe on your child. And it's I don't want to say that Almodovar was putting in a lot of commentary in his film, because I think there's a good amount there before we get to this end point of the film. But could this have been, like, everyone points to Philadelphia as the AIDS movie of the 90s. Could this have been Almodovar's AIDS movie?
You know, I don't really know. I mean, like, that's such a hard thing to say. I just, as like a really quick detour, one of the other reasons why this movie is so important to me is because, aside from sort of like how it coincided with my becoming a cinephile, or I should say one of the reasons why it helped me become a cinephile is because he was the first director where I thought this person is someone special and someone unique, and I should go seek out all of their works. And so I ended up like learning a lot about Spanish culture when I was in college, and I ended up Spanish cinema. And so it's really easy to place the movie in terms of like a Spanish national context, where after Franco died around 1980, this like very big loosening up, this liberalization of Spanish culture, and certainly the increased visibility of gay culture was a big part of that. That happened in the 80s. That's how Almodovar first became famous. So I don't really know if his point was to instruct, per se. I think you're definitely supposed to see Rosa's mom as kind of this, like, more ignorant type of person. But I feel like part of what he was trying to do, I don't know. I guess, like, what I perhaps mean is that it seems like Spain might have already gone through that whole, like, AIDS thing by the time this movie was made, if that makes sense.
I think it would have to, because I say this almost in a jokish tone, but something that hit me last night rewatching this movie was, while we hear the story of Manuela and Lola, when we move forward and we realize that Lola is the father of Penelope Cruz's child, the younger Esteban, we have to come to the realization that Penelope Cruz was okay with sleeping with Lola in that state. And it kind of cues you into the difference of culture when it comes to sexuality in Spain, as opposed to what we would have today, versus even in the 90s at that time.
Well, I think I would have two responses to that. I think I would largely agree with you, but I think that something to keep in mind is that Penelope Cruz's character is kind of like supposed to be this like very tolerant, like social workery, accepting everyone, like Mother Teresa type of figure. And then the other part is that something that maybe might be lost on some people is that the movie starts in Madrid, which is sort of like much more serious a city. And then she goes to Barcelona to look for Lola. And Barcelona is a much gayer city. It's Barcelona is basically like the gay capital of Spain.
In the Catalans, interesting. City.
So, and then, like, eventually she goes back to Madrid, partly to escape Rosa's mother. But I think, like, the fact that she seemed to have, like, a fairly normal life when she was raising her son, and she didn't want to tell him, her son, about his father's transgenderedness. And then when he goes to, and then when, she goes to Barcelona, and then suddenly all of her friends are queer in some way. Like, that's sort of, like, supposed to show you the huge cultural difference between Madrid and Barcelona.
Well, so. I mean, also, we generally didn't spend that much time in Madrid to know anyone to see that difference. It was just, like as you said, it was a busy area. It felt like Madrid was the place where everyone was serious and it was business time, almost because we always spent time within business in the hospital, or she was at home with her son. That was it. Right?
Yeah, right.
In Barcelona, we were all over the place.
In a fun way.
Yes, in a fun way. I mean, personally, when I watch this movie and I think about all of the Barcelona activities, I almost like to imagine it as a complete and utter fantasy for Manuela that was generated for her by her son Esteban, who says, and he even says it earlier in the movie, I'm writing stories for you, and we are living out these stories. And that I think is the number one thing which kind of makes this movie somewhat special for me.
Well, I mean, I think you have a really great point there, because the only reason why she goes to Barcelona is because she reads in his diary or notebook or whatever that he really wanted to meet his father. So his writing does, like, kind of propel her into the Barcelona world.
But I mean, it's something even more than that, where it, like, movies are fantasies completely, like, we can't dispute that. But more than that, the movie itself feels like it wants to make Manuela the hero of everyone. Like we you mentioned Mother Teresa when you're talking about Penelope Cruz, but mm-hmm. but this felt even more than Mother Teresa. It felt like she had to be the great actress for humor. She had to be the mother that Penelope Cruz didn't have. She had to be the friend that Agrado, I hope I'm not messing up that name, didn't have. She had to be, she ended up even being the mother to Esteban that Esteban wouldn't have. Like, how many people did Manuela need to be a hero to?
That's what makes her so awesome.
It does. But I want to pull us back a moment. And you actually mentioned something about this film and what it almost, I shouldn't say almost, what it inspired in you. And it became your interest in Spanish culture and history and even film as what was the beginning of this whole conversation. But mm-hmm. I'm very curious, what was it? Because most people, when they come and talk about their film that made them fall in love, were generally going down the rabbit hole of movie love, of cinephilia. But you seem to have gone into a turn of just more than that, of almost a contextualization of your love of film because of this cultural difference of what you were seeing versus what you were experiencing in real life. Did you find yourself doing this more and more for films overall, or was it just something specific to Almodóvar and this movie?
You mean in trying to learn more about
the
like
world?
More
about the worlds that we were experiencing within films, especially in the world of international cinema.
I think that it would be really hard to do that, so I am going to say no, I didn't.
Who knows? You could have been the Manuela of this podcast. You could have been that awesome.
But I am not. I think Almodovar was someone who was really, really special for me. I think, you know, like, I was already learning Spanish in high school. So when I got to college, I took some more Spanish classes. And, you know, like, my first year, I did a report on Almodovar. And I'm sure, and, like, when I took a class on Spanish cinema, I did another paper on Almodovar. Like, I was really obsessed with this guy. So, no, I wouldn't say that, like, that was something that I tried to do. I mean, I think it's certainly something that I would love to try to do, but every country is so different.
So this was a thing which was specific to Almodovar then, completely and entirely.
Yeah, I think that there's like a couple of countries I'm really particularly interested in. And so I know a little bit about their cinema. Like, I'm really interested in Brazilian cinema. I'm really interested in Korean cinema, and I'm really interested in Spanish cinema. So it's very specific.
As someone who, I don't want to single you out, but I feel like you are one of the more popular voices in discussing women in film on the internet nowadays. As one of, as someone who is always looking for more examples and more films which kind of highlight women in a positive and interesting manner, do you find yourself coming back to this movie as a bookmark for that conversation?
That's a really great question. I think that if I don't think that I would look upon it as a touchstone, but I think you're definitely right in that it was definitely one of the first movies that I saw. And there was, there's not something sort of like overtly heroic about Manuela. Like, there's no like swelling parade music as she like reaches her last goal or anything. But there is like so great a degree of complexity to her and sort of like all of the other women that she meets. And so it was definitely one of the first times I remember thinking, I'm watching this movie. It's about a woman. The woman characters are actually interesting. Why did it take so long for me to watch a movie where the female characters were this interesting? Because that's hard to find.
Sadly, it is. And I think it's more important to note that you had to go to Europe to find that movie.
Or I had to find, like, a gay director who was really interested in stories about women. Like, it's, I mean, like, it is really sad. But, you know, I think, like, maybe this movie and then, like, Silence of the Lambs. Like, to me, that those are sort of, like, the touchstones of, like, 90s feminism for me. I'm not going to count this. I'm not going to count Spice World. Like,
I will admit this. I actually went to the theater with my best friend at the time to go and watch Spice World.
Oh my gosh.
I was like 13 years old or younger. I can't even remember what year it was at this point. And I fell asleep in the theater. That was the first movie I ever fell asleep in the theater watching.
You don't have a favorite spice?
I was not a spice person. Like, I just wasn't into them at all. Like, I think that might have been the first time that as a youngster, there was this big pop sensation happening around me and I went, no. You're all wrong.
Well, then you'll never be my lover. You're not getting with my friends.
Oh, I think that's okay. All right, so one last thing, deep continuing on Almodovar. I'm curious for you, as someone who I'm assuming has seen a lot, or at least most, or I don't know, all of his films at this point. I'm curious, what happened to your brain the moment you saw his film, The Flower of My Secret?
Which one is that?
That is the movie about an aged novelist who's writing under a pseudonym, and you find out that Almodovar is using this movie as a way to pitch like four other movies he wants to make. It involves the plot of Bulbear, it involves the plot of Talk to Her, It also involves the plot of this movie. All about starts out in the same hospital that we see in this movie that we start out with. It is. I don't. Have you seen this movie?
You know, I know that I have, but I think there was like a week where I watched like 7 of his movies in a row, and it's completely gone from my brain.
Oh, okay.
I will tell you that I think as the more that he works, it becomes more and more obvious he's recycling a lot of his like older movies.
Specifically was something that preempted all of those movies he was referencing.
I think that's something that he very obviously does as a director is to sort of start with an idea and then basically like loosely remake that movie like at a later point.
Okay.
I mean, like, I don't hold it against him, and I think it's a little hard to demand that like every single movie that a director makes is like the best movie ever.
Well, you see, I wasn't even going there. I was looking at it in the complete opposite direction, right?
Okay.
Where instead of thinking it as Bulbert came out and oh, he did this movie 3 movies ago in a subsection of that movie, I thought of it the other way around, going, this is a director attempting to announce to the world, I want to make these. And while the movie that we're doing this in isn't the most amazing film ever, it kind of comes off as a weird little interesting experiment that he does. And then when he gets to actually make these, it becomes something special.
Yeah, I think sometimes his ideas need a little bit of time to evolve, I guess, or really blossom. Hopefully, like, one day he'll remake I'm So Excited, and it'll actually be good.
Oh, I had a little likening to that movie. That movie was fun.
It was silly and fun. It was silly and fun. But I don't know. Like, if you want to talk about, like, recycling ideas, like, that's the movie that we can talk about.
Oh, wow. I'm trying to think where that would have been recycled from Timey Up, Timey Down. I don't know. Okay, I'm kind of curious about something, because it's something that I think you've talked about a little bit, but I want to try and go in a little bit further. Not generally what this movie did to you as a film lover, but what this movie changed for you for movies going after, where after this point you started to see movies differently? Did you start to judge them differently?
I guess maybe. I definitely already talked about like the woman issue where it was sort of like, why can't everything be this way? But I remember also, you know, like, if you look at all of the backgrounds that he has with, like, all of that gloriously cheesy 80s wallpaper in, like, every one of the houses. And then if you think about, like, all of that, like, that brilliant, like, hyper-real colors and, like, that beautiful wash of, like, blue with, like, the blood orange red that he has, like, it's definitely one of those films that you can't help but look at it because it's so fucking gorgeous. And I think that's another point where once you've watched a movie this beautiful, like, you sort of have more. And then every other movie that isn't really visually spectacular, you're sort of like, why? Why are you not good enough?
You talk about the visual sensation of Almodovar's films. I kind of categorize him generally not so much as a filmmaker, but a painter who accidentally picked up a camera, where he always wants to have those crazy colors in his movies. And I think the first time I even saw him do something outside of that was with The Skin I Live In, where it felt a little toned down, even though he still had something in there like it. But I think it works best in movies like this, All About My Mother, where it feels more than the backdrop and the colors of the dresses and all of the light of Spain hitting us in the face as we're watching these movies, it feels like he's just painting emotion on the screen for us. And
very expressionist.
Yeah, it is. Like it almost feels like if you attempt to apply one-to-one logic of the world to my movie, you are failing yourself as a watcher of these films. Because you're supposed to see this as just a painting on a wall where you'd stand and you'd stare at it for hours.
But his camera is so fluid, though.
It is. It's just a weird feeling I have when I watch his movies, and I can't quite explain it yet fully. Like, I can't quite say, this is how I feel, and these 10 points are my evidence. Like, I haven't figured out my evidence yet.
You'll have to develop your ideas a bit more, like Almodovar has to sometimes.
Yes, in another 10 years, I'd have made those 10 evidence movies, and everyone will figure out that I'm the genius I am.
Yes. Maybe to sort of answer your question better, I think that one of the things that was so revelatory about this movie for me is that it completely expanded my idea of what a film could be in terms of its sensibility. I've talked about sort of like this like melodrama / camp sensibility that I love in this movie before, but it comes out in the visuals. It comes out, I think, through the music. I think that the very complex layering of all of the previous references to Tennessee Williams or Lorca or All About Eve, and sort of that the rhythm of the editing is also like a little bit different in that it's much more abrupt sometimes than you would see in like a Hollywood movie. And so I think by being so radically different from what I had previously experienced, it really upended my ideas of like how a film could be. Something that excited in me as a budding cinephile was to try to see what type of other ways certain directors can make a world. I think that it's something that's really important to me, because a lot of, like, this is something that I've been thinking about a lot, because I think I used to think that shorts were more like short stories and films were more like novels. And now that television has come to its own a little bit, it feels more and more to me like film is a short story and television is a novel. Like, there's something just so narratively confined about film to me, because you sort of have to tell a cohesive story within 90 minutes or 3 hours or whatever. And so as I'm realizing more and more sort of like the repetitiveness of all of these movies that I am seeing, something that stands out more and more to me is the world building within those stories. That maybe like the unoriginality of the story doesn't matter to me as much. And this goes for TV shows as well. And so there's a kind of like world building, not only just through like who populates it, but also through the music and through all of the visual stuff that I was talking about in All About My Mother, that really exploded my ideas of like what I should be able to see on screen. And maybe one of the reasons why I wanted to watch a lot more foreign films after watching this movie is that I really wanted to see all of those other worlds that people who didn't share a culture with me were also capable of creating.
So what you're basically looking at there is you're talking about the idea of diving into worlds where you have no grounding to begin with and enjoying the fact that it's built that well.
It's, you know, cinema as travel, maybe, but why shouldn't that be one of the pleasures of cinema?
It generally should be. Why can't movies be like that more? Be like that more. Be more like that. I wish I spoke better English. I should learn a different language and claim English is my second language. I think I'd just be worse at the other one, but sure. Almodovar, you're definitely right, because that is one thing that Almodovar does well, which is he paints these worlds into something unique. And I'm very curious, because you talked about this movie and Almodovar kind of sparking your interest in the Spanish culture. Like, when you watch a movie about a different world, a different country, a different town, and you kind of get enthralled into that world building that's created there, do you start to create your own idea of what this world must be like versus the fantasy that we're watching now? Or do you take that fantasy as your own base level that you're starting to build up as you go more and more into that world, into that culture?
Do you mean, like, do I wonder about the mechanics of that world, or do I wonder about the culture that produced that world?
The culture that produced that world.
Oh. I guess, like, sometimes. I know I shouldn't generalize about cultures. I think maybe the only one I feel really comfortable about doing is to Korean culture, because I feel like I know that one fairly well, or more than other people do. I like a really good example, I should say, is the movie Stoker, which, did you watch that movie?
Oh, I adored that movie.
Okay. So, like, that movie is directed by Park Chan-wook, or Park Chan-wook. I hate that sound.
All right. Well, I'm gonna ask you for my own benefit once again to say the correct pronunciation.
Park Chan-wook.
Okay. I will attempt to never say it the other way ever again.
You probably should, because no one will understand what you're saying. But I like something that I really liked about that movie is it seemed like really Korean to me, and people have asked me to explain what I mean, and I can't really, but there was like this like weird dark humor in it. Like, I found that movie really hilarious, but I saw it at a critics screening, and I was the only person laughing, you know, in the screening. And then I felt weird, but I knew there was something, like, really ineffably Korean there. So, you know, like, I think that's sort of inevitable.
It definitely is. I mean, there are things which are always just going to get you in a way that others don't see it for one reason or another. Whether it be us in the film world who have just seen oh, so many movies, and that one in-joke of people who've seen films are like, yeah, you're going to get this. Or if it's just a cultural Korean or Spanish thing. But I think I'm almost at the point where I have to say that we've hit that wall here, because this movie is spectacular, but I'm very curious if there's anything that you want to note down as something that you hope people especially pay attention to when watching All About My Mother, whether it be for the first time or the 50th.
I think that something that really struck me this time around is like these like weird gradations between camp and melodrama. I've talked about this like throughout this whole podcast. I think it's fairly self-explanatory that there's a very fine line sometimes between camp and melodrama. And the thing that I really like about this movie, as someone who is a big melodrama fan and a big camp fan, is that like he really straddles the line between both, and then whether he wants to go for a more tragic route or whether he wants to go for a more campy route, he really like modulates that so that it like leans more on one or the other. And there's just like weird little places where he finds camp value. Like something that I thought was really interesting is there's like an initial training video very early in the film, because Manuela begins as a nurse who has to talk people into becoming organ donors. And you see her in like a video, like a training video for her hospital, where she is demonstrating like how you should ask a parent or a son or whatever if like their dead beloved ones are able to, if they can basically take the organs. And so there's like a weird, like hilarious soap opera-ness to her performance, and like the fact that she could find, that he could find camp, like a training video, was like hilarious to me. And so like the performances, like we haven't really talked about the performances so far. They're obviously uniformly magical, but I think that like granulation between like, or that like the subtle switches between the camp and the melodrama are something to really watch out for, and to sort of see like what are the subtle shifts that the actors are doing to basically be like between those two sensibilities, but to modulate a little bit more, usually for comedy, sometimes for tragedy. I don't know. I guess like the fact that there is such a fine line between those two polar opposites is something that is really great about the film. And that's what you should watch out for.
Okay. I want to say thank you so much, Ingu, for coming and talking with me.
Thank you so much for letting me blather on and on and on.
Well, it's an amazing film, so regardless what you said, it would have been great.
Well, thanks for inviting me to talk, Andrew.
That was the episode. Once again, I want to thank Ingu for coming and talking to me. It was kind of a great conversation. I love that bit, you know, that bit, the one that was before the other bit. Like, I really like those bits. I know this isn't funny, but I think it is because I'm stupid. Or at the very least, I'm very silly. Otherwise, I'd like to thank you all for listening. It's been great. Why am I saying it's been great? Like, the show is no longer going to happen anymore. It should, even though I don't even have the next episode planned yet. I need to start working on that. As always, you can find the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, and also over at my website over at dreamreviews.com, where I host all of the podcasts, including my other one, the Unnamed Movie Podcast, which you guys should go and give a listen. But anyways, thanks so much for listening. Good night. Abdu huyambar nyare malaikala Khawe he chiko dano sesaro Momu monila degam julingam Momu, Monila, Degamwo.